Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Did you know that half of America is single? Hollywood has never produced anything like this before. The Dating Project, a groundbreaking documentary that follows five single people, ages 18 to 40, as they search for authentic and meaningful relationships. There is no script. There are no actors. These are real people trying to find love and happiness in an age of swiping left or right. From Empower Pictures, Paulist Productions, Family Theater Productions, and PureFlix, you can now own The Dating Project. Save the date by visiting thedatingprojectmovie.com and go a step further and help others in your circle date differently by partnering with Ascension Press. Visit shop.ascensionpress.com to acquire the companion study guide. The Dating Project movie is now available on DVD and digital download on Amazon, iTunes, and Walmart. Please visit thedatingprojectmovie.com for details.
Welcome to Beneath the Surface, everybody. Good to have you with us tonight here at WCAP 980 on your dial. I'm Paul Morano, your host, and I am actually glad to be back at the golden BTS seat at this wonderful radio station here in beautiful downtown Lowell. Cindy, my producer, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Good. How was your Christmas?
It was cool. A lot of presents, a lot of family.
Really? A lot of presents? Would you have, did you have more presents or more family?
More family.
How about food? A lot of that too?
Yeah, a lot of food, but I stayed away from a lot of it.
Well, what'd you do New Year's Eve? Anything?
Worked, and then I went home and watched the ball go down.
Oh, so you did stay up at least. Right? So did I. To welcome the new year. Welcome to 2017, everybody. First Beneath the Surface on the year 2017 AD. My name again is Paul Morano. I just want to introduce you to my guest tonight on Beneath the Surface Radio, Mr. John Tutoris.
Hello, hello, hello.
John, you are my, you continue to be my first week of the month rotating guest.
Yes.
I just wanted to tell you that so that everyone else could know, too.
Is that also a reminder to make sure I don't call in sick?
Yes, that is one of those. But sometimes we sort of shuffle you guys around,
yes,
depending on the situation.
Yes,
you know?
like a deck of cards.
Like a deck of cards, yeah. Yeah. How was your, really quick, how was your Christmas and New Year's and all of that good stuff?
Very good. Went to Western Mass, spent some time with family in the Berkshires. Very good. Came back and here I am.
Yeah. I spent some time amongst 87 degree weather and around palm trees.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you came back.
Imagine that. Unbelievable. There should be a law against this kind of weather. Man, is it frigid out there.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say about New England. Yeah. If you don't like the weather, wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to winter, you kind of have to wait about 4 months.
Well, more so here where I'm in Rhode Island.
Yeah.
Because it's near the coast, it's not very often that the snow sticks too long, so I'd be surprised if this lasted more than a few more weeks on the ground.
Well, it was good to see family. For me personally, we went to Virginia, and then we went to both coasts of Florida. We got family in all three of those places, and then we took a train all the way back up here, and it was fun. It was a good time.
A train ride.
Yeah. How was it?
How long was it?
Oh, a good something like 35 hours.
Wow. Well,
piece of cake.
How was the food on the train?
The food on the train was average. How's that?
So edible.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, that was it. It was edible. They had both a dining car and a snack car. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Was there any intrigue, any spies, or anything like that you encountered?
I did not, no. Was I?
Did they have Murder on the Orient Express? Was any murder mystery they had to solve?
No mystery. No mystery at all, thanks be to God. Yeah. I was kind of hoping for no mystery, and that's what I got. Yes. 978-454-4980 is our BTS hotline. 978-454-4980. Tonight, my fellow truth seekers, we go beneath the surface on the topic of the population myth. I'm laughing because I'll just tell the audience what happened before the show came on. I came in here and I said, Cindy, I want a little something before I say the name the title of tonight's show. So I'm going to say, my fellow truth seekers, tonight we go beneath the surface on, and I want you to give me something like a bell or something, some kind of sound. And that's what Cindy came up with. Thank you, Cindy, very much. Maybe every week you can come up with a different sound. Yeah. All right. She's just sort of shrugging her shoulders, hoping that it worked, and I think it did. Anyway, our more serious topic for tonight is entitled The Population Myth. Are we really suffering from overpopulation? Are people the Earth's biggest problem, as some people seem to think? Should governments get involved in population, policy, and control? All that and much more with my guest, Mr. John Tudorus. Our phone number here at BTS Radio is 978-454-4980. John, before we get to our topic, the meat of our topic, I came across a Prager University video today online, and it sort of, not directly, but perhaps indirectly, relates to our topic tonight. And I saw a picture, and it said, would you, there's a sort of a drawing, a picture of a dog and a person, and they're both in the ocean or in a pool or some kind of body of water, and they both seem to be drowning. And the picture asked the person who reads it, who would you save first? The dog, your dog, or a stranger? Your dog or a stranger? And the presumption is if you save one, the other one will probably drown. But you're able to save one.
So we're assuming that the dog is not a golden retriever.
we're not assuming anything. We're assuming that it's a dog that you truly love. He's your companion. Mm-hmm. And there's a stranger somewhat there near your dog. I have been asking a similar but different question, but very similar to this one, to my college students for the past 14 years or so. I thought I was rather unique, but apparently not. And what's interesting is the answer that they gave, well, I tell you what, I'm not going to tell the audience yet what answer was more popular. But I do want to throw that out. I do want to throw this question out to the audience. So if you're listening and you want to call in and just give me your opinion as to, maybe I'll take a poll, an informal poll. And you don't even have to get on the air. You can just call in and Cindy, the producer, will sort of take your vote. You're in a situation where you can only save one of these creatures, the dog you love or a complete stranger. Who would you save? The phone number is 978. I almost forgot it. It's 978-454-4980. Write that down. 978-454-4980. If enough people call, I will take the tally and let you know at the end of the show. John.
Can they also vote via Facebook?
Probably, yeah. The Facebook, you can go to facebook.com/ fellow truth seekers, all one word, facebook.com/ fellow truth seekers. And that's the Beneath the Surface website. You can just jot your opinion down there anonymously if you'd like. And there you have it. The stranger or the dog. I'm not going to ask your opinion yet because I don't want you to influence anyone else.
I'm going to be totally non-influential.
Okay. Anyway, let's get to the topic at large here, the population myth. You had suggested this topic to me, and I thought it was a great topic. Where do we begin? It's so ingrained in modern society today, this myth that there is an overpopulation in this world, and if we don't do anything drastic soon, we're all going to die, and it's all going to be a disaster, and we better be up in arms, we better be alarmed, and this alarm has really began in the 1960s, didn't it, with a particular book?
Yes. I mean, the book that you're referring to is The Population Bomb by Paul Ehrlich. Later on, it was confirmed, at least per the article that I read, that his wife had also co-authored it but was uncredited when it was first issued. Mm. That in itself, now keep in mind, that's a huge watershed moment. It's not the absolute start. In fact, you'll find some precursor notes, some movements that build up to it, such as eugenics movement, which started in the late 1800s. That's actually very huge.
Yep.
And of course, Planned Parenthood with Margaret Sanger, that goes back to what, at least the 1930s-ish?
Yeah, it was first called the Birth Control League.
Yeah.
And she, of course, seems to be well documented that one of the reasons that she was so adamant about creating this this birth control league that's evolved into Planned Parenthood was to stop the minority populations from growing.
Yes, she was an out-and-out racist.
Okay.
So that's built upon the eugenics ideas too. That basically, just like a dog breeder could control the characteristics of a dog and would just quote unquote dispose of undesirables. Mm. The same thing with people. There would be undesirables, and you dispose of them in order to come to this idea of a more perfect person or persons. And coming from that, of course, too, comes ideas of ethnic cleansing. I mean, Hitler wasn't the only one. I mean, now you've seen it in other areas, too.
He seems to be the whipping boy, doesn't he? Every time you think of somebody evil, you take out the Hitler card.
Yeah, and you know, part of it, too, I think, is because Hitler seems like he's far removed from people. He's someone else in some other country in an earlier time, which has passed at least a few generations ago. He's recent enough where people kind of identify with him as far as understanding who he was as a person, historical figure. But what a lot of times they don't realize is that he himself was a big fan of Margaret Sanger.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yes, and I believe they actually met.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Hitler had a certain charism to him, apparently, certain charisma. And, you know, he rose in popularity partly because of that charisma and, you know, other historical problems that happened in Germany at that time. But how many people who don't particularly have that charisma, that don't have that way with people, and hence can't get that power over people, how many of those people do you think could do something that Hitler did? How many people have that potential?
I mean, as far as influencing other people?
No. Just causing Holocaust or genocide. What I'm saying is, sure, he was in that situation. He rose to power,
sure,
and he was able to do it. And everybody says, whoa, how horrible he was. And of course, but how many people walking around today, if they had that kind of opportunity, might or could or would fall into that?
I'll say that, although they may not do so on the surface, it really starts within our hearts. And I don't mean that in any sort of sentimental way. I just mean in those things that we actually value and hold dear, and the beliefs that we actually espouse. And you'll find that even many people amongst the common man, so to speak, actually do hold views that are, if not explicitly like Hitler's, as far as wanting to completely cleanse a race to the point where you actually follow it out, maybe to a lesser degree, they hold it in their hearts and minds. You know, that, you know, for example,
and if they had the power, they might actually be other Hitlers.
Well, that's right.
That's the point I'm making.
Yes, because nothing happens in a vacuum. And
right.
That's the real key. It's not like Hitler happened in a vacuum where he didn't have the roots of some of those behaviors earlier on. They were there in seed form, and when the power came up, things just started snowballing from there. And if someone who's espousing the certain views towards other people, if they are given power, nature says that they're going to continue in that same fashion, and perhaps it may grow even bigger from there.
Just theoretically, what percentage of people? I'm a student of human nature. I'm very fascinated by human beings. What percentage of people do you think have the potential to become a monster if put into the situation?
Most people.
Really? You really think
so? Yes, without a doubt.
Wow.
Yep.
Most people.
Obviously we don't all have the same temperament, right?
Sure.
So some people are, even if they espouse these things, they'll internalize it. They'll just kind of keep to themselves.
Right.
The other people are a bit more expressive. But when we say potential, we mean that if someone is given the wrong formation, chances are they're going to turn out wrong themselves. And even Hitler noticed that too. It's a somewhat infamous or famous quote, where he said, "Give me a child of five, and I will make him into whatever I want him to be." And that's one reason why his Hitler Youth Corps had started so early in the recruitment by force of many young men.
So there's something to be said about a good society creates or helps form good individuals.
Yes.
Okay.
But that society doesn't just happen within a governmental system, that society actually happens most naturally within the family.
I know we're going on a tangent, and I promise to get back in a second, but you've noticed in the past few decades the trend of not focusing on good, but focusing on freedom, to the point where people have lost sight of the notion of a good society. In other words, as long as people are consenting, that's all that matters.
You know what that reminds me of?
Yeah.
Money. Mm. Money is a means. It's not an end. And that even goes back to Aristotle. Even Aristotle recognized that 2,400 years ago. Money is a means. It's not an end. Yeah. Freedom is a means. It is not an end to itself. And so when people prize the means over the ends,
you have problems. Yeah.
Always have problems.
Yeah, and that's exactly what seems to be happening today. We have ignored or rejected the notion of objective good, and so creating a good society is almost foreign. The idea is almost foreign to people's minds today. The creating of a free society, and of course what people mean by that is being able to do what you want, is more so what people are trying to do today.
Yeah, it's the classical term given for that is license.
Right.
So license is freedom without responsibility. Authentic freedom itself necessitates a real responsibility, because freedom is meant for people to do what they ought to do, not necessarily what they want. And by ought, I mean what is rightly ordered and good. And so there's many things that are rightly ordered and good that might be pleasurable or good. Sometimes they are not.
But if you've lost sight in what is objectively right order and what is objectively good, then all you're left with is radically individual freedom, which really isn't freedom.
No, it isn't.
It very quickly gets you into trouble.
Oh, yes. It's actually a slavery of real sorts.
It creates a personal slavery to vice, to obsession, obsession, to addiction, and so forth. No question about it. 978-454-4980. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. So let's get back to this notion of there are too many people on the world. And it seems to be related to everything we've talked about so far, because there seems to be a growing attitude that human life is cheap. It's no longer seen as valuable or sacred, perhaps, as it used to be. No.
Oh, yeah. Oh yes, but you better save that snowy barn owl with one black tip on its wing that only exists in that part of the forest in that part of the world. So help you, because if you don't, then well. Whatever.
Well, that's that's sort of another problem with the population movement. That more and more so, as you have seen, that humans and other animals are becoming more and more seen as more and more equal to each other in value.
Even though that flies in the face of objective reality.
How do you convince somebody who is into this whole secular humanist movement that humans and animals are simply equally valuable animals? How do you convince them of that? That's a disordered way of thinking.
Every person's different, right? So if we were to try and give one path solution, it wouldn't really work for everyone. Someone might really honestly and goodnessly listen to reason, and there you can just go back and forth and have a really good dialogue and talk about the respective natures of other animals versus people. And then over time, if they're intellectually honest, it'll become very clear that rational animal, which is man, is very much different than non-rational animal, which is every other animal and then some.
So the rational or reason, as well as free will, are two powers that other animals don't have. Let's get real beneath the surface on this. What if somebody were to say, so what if they have them? Why are those higher or better? Why do you value those or think they're better than a snail or a horse that has their particular gifts, but not necessarily intellect and will? What standard are you judging this?
That's a good question. Before I continue, I'll confess I don't think I have the full answer to that one, which, by the way, is an important thing to state whenever you're having dialogue. If you don't know, just say it.
You know, I tell my students that all the time. My favorite answer is, I don't know.
Yeah.
Whenever they say, I don't know, I say, awesome answer. Really good.
But if I were to look at it right now, I'd say, well, let's take a step back and look at the bigger picture, right?
Okay.
How do things appear? How do they work in nature? And there, over time, and studying it, not as how we want nature to appear, but how is it really? And I think the answers start to make the more sense. For example, it is often that higher animals consume the lower.
Okay, so the food chain.
The food chain.
You'd point to the food chain as something that conveys value?
Yes.
So isn't this a stronger survive kind of mentality?
Well, that's only part of the equation, because if you only take part of it and focus solely on that, inevitably you take it out of context because you ignore other things that are naturally there.
Okay.
So the other part is intellect, right?
Okay.
So we see even in other animals, the animals which tend to have a greater or better intellect may sometimes rule over the others. In some way, shape, or form. Maybe not necessarily as individuals, but there's a hierarchy in nature. And so qualities such as power, speed...
But I'm going to even say something that sounds bizarre on the surface, but if we don't have a good answer to it, then we really don't have an answer. And that is, who's to say that a snail who doesn't have any power of intellect or any of these things, he doesn't have strength of body, isn't more valuable than a horse, an oak tree, or a human?
Who's to say?
Yeah, what's to say? Why is reason, free will, higher thinking, why is this a better state of being?
Do you have the answer?
Than a squirrel. Well... See, what I'm trying to get beneath the surface on the fact that we all have a standard by which we judge these things. We have to, or else there is no such thing as truth, goodness, or beauty.
Correct.
It's just completely meaningless when we use these terms, that something is better than something else, if something is more true, if something's more beautiful. There has to be a standard by which all human beings judge this, even if they're not aware of it or conscious of it.
I would agree, and I would say if someone takes a sort of a 20,000 foot view of human history from all cultures,
yeah,
you'll find evidence of that across the board, that humans have consistently shown dominance over all the other animal species.
Well, again, dominance is interesting.
I don't mean just dominance as far as rule, but also dominance as far as cultivation.
Cultivation, creativity, being able to alter the environment.
And even stewardship, too.
Stewardship.
And that, I think, is actually incredibly important.
But really, if the bottom line is, why are all of these things good? Who says or what says that all of these things we just mentioned are good?
Well, are you talking from a supernatural or natural end?
I'm just talking from any end.
I would say life dictates that. Life, by its nature, is fruitful.
Let me just stop you right there, because that's extremely important and relates to our topic tonight.
Yes.
Why is life better than death? Now, I asked that question, you're probably saying, well, of course it is. I'll buy that. But why of course it is? We need a reason for that. What standard do we use to say that living is a good thing, surviving is a worthy thing, rather than dying?
And basically, existence is better than non-existence.
Yes. How do we know?
Well, if there was non-existence, there would be no life. There wouldn't be anything.
So what? Yes.
We wouldn't even be having this conversation.
And why is that a bad thing?
Yes. I like my life.
I like a lot of things, but I don't have them. So, yeah. I mean, liking something doesn't necessarily mean it's good. I like a lot of things that are bad for me.
Yeah, well, not the things that are bad for you maybe aren't compatible with your nature. Life is compatible with your nature. It's part of who you are.
What is that ultimate standard that tells me life is better than non-life?
The ultimate standard?
Okay, there is one, and we're going to talk about it right after. I'm trying to lead you there. We're not there yet, but we will be immediately after this break. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. We're here at WCAP Radio. This is Beneath the Surface. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away. And we're back. 978-454-4980. That's 978-454-4980 is our Beneath the Surface hotline. Tonight we're here till 11 o'clock talking about the population myth, but first we're talking about human life. And before the break, we were trying to understand why we judge the things the way that we do, and whether truth, goodness, or beauty in anything makes any sense at all. Where does it derive its meaning? By what standard are we judging that which is true or goodness or beautiful? Now, John, let me ask you this. Are you familiar with Aquinas' fourth proof for the existence of God relating to the order of perfection?
Vaguely, yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, basically, that's where I was going with this. If there isn't an ultimate standard of perfection, then by what do we judge things as being more or less perfect, more or less true, more or less beautiful, more or less good?
Sure.
Does that make sense?
It actually does make sense. There has to be some standard, otherwise people could just be making up based off of their own feelings and opinions, and
precisely,
someone else is no more valid than another person's.
Precisely. And isn't that where secular humanism is today? That no opinions are really any more valid than any others?
Oh, not even just secular humanism. Yeah, it's hit the common parlance. Right.
And when it comes to human life, and I guess this is where we need to go with population, it's, you know, human beings, squirrels, snails, they're all the same. Humans are the problem because we're the ones that are a little smarter and we get to mess up the world a little more. So population control kind of makes sense to these kind of environmental types. How would you respond to that?
I would say on the surface, there does seem to be a certain sense. A part of that makes sense, in so much as that We look out in nature. If you, again, you step back a little, you see that there's a certain harmoniousness, a certain cycle of life. And then you realize that we do have an animal nature. We're part of that.
Yes.
And you see in certain areas where maybe we've terraformed, you've created these grand cities, and you see the results of pollution. Maybe some companies throwing all sorts of sludge in the river. It destroys an environment. And yeah, it can be a little shocking. Say, yeah, we, in the royal we sense, we messed it up. We destroyed this environment. We've poisoned the groundwater. And so, yeah, say, okay, on the surface, I say, yeah, but it's missing the deeper parts. It's not really seeing the whole picture. And that's, I think, is really key because our intellect is part of our nature, too.
Yes.
Our ability to construct things is part of our nature, too. And so if we were to say, yes, you must only be good stewards of the environment, don't let that snowy barn owl with the black on one tip ever die because that's what it means to be a good steward. Well, who says?
You know? Right.
I mean, yes, our intellect. Yes, we want to, you know, we won't, don't want to unnecessarily destroy things if we don't need to.
Do you remember, speaking of destroying things, remember a few months ago there was that controversy of a baby got into a zoo.
The gorilla.
Harambe the gorilla. And you know, they there was a big controversy about, you know, should you kill the gorilla or not? Because if you only try to tranquilize the gorilla, it might not work and he might lash out at the baby. You know, a lot of people were angry that they killed the gorilla to save the baby.
You know who wasn't angry?
You.
The zookeepers.
Oh, the zookeepers.
Here's the interesting thing is those who were there to take care of the animals have a better perspective on the nature of the animals in relation to people. They realize that they can't treat them as just some cute things at arm's length.
Yes.
They have to respect their nature
in
order to tend to them properly. And those are the ones who said, That's the only choice we could make.
I mean, those gorillas, they can be very affectionate. They could also be very, very vicious.
Well, that's the thing is, it wasn't like he was being vicious. He was dragging the kid around, by his leg?
Yeah.
Because it was just another thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
how does he know? But that little kid might die, you know, just like a great white shark, right? Their way of touching. Now, honestly, they don't like the taste of people. They like seals.
Yeah.
But you know what? When they go and touch a person, they just happen to rip their leg off. Well, that's the nature of a shark.
Right. Very dangerous.
And so you have to respect that.
Got to respect the dangerous nature that are the dangerous effects that could occur by getting into their space. We've gotten by this notion that there is better and worse. There is good and evil. And it is, we all have these words and they derive their meaning from the ultimate, infinite, and eternal truth, goodness, and beauty himself, which, of course, theists call God. Without God, there is no barometer, there is no measuring stick, if you will, for these words to make any sense down here. That's what I was trying to get at. And hence, life is good because we understand that this eternal, infinite God of the universe is life. He is supernatural life.
Well,
and so life is good, and being is good, and there is gradation of good and evil.
Well, you're introducing something really important, is the idea that the life of man is not just a natural life. It's not just our material body. Mm. We actually have a spiritual component to us.
Mm.
And that's just the term that is developed over millennia to describe that immaterial part of our existence.
Mm. So then, is this more perfect than a being that doesn't have a spiritual component?
Oh, yes. You go back to Aristotle. He was
and
very,
it is because
it's
more godly, you could say.
Yes, it more imitates the first cause of everything else.
So the more something images the eternal reality himself, the more perfect a being you're talking about. Okay.
Yes, and even get this is really interesting. So here's Aristotle, 400 years before Christ, and before the ancient Greeks met with the ancient Israel, which was the only monotheistic culture at the time,
right.
And had some even then had some belief in some mysterious
beings. Sure. So the Greeks were polytheistic pagans.
He came to this notion that there were actually beings of pure spirit that were not the first cause, but were not man, and were actually more powerful and greater than man in their nature. They were pure spirit.
So Christians, of course, have something very similar, and we call them angels.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes, and Aquinas actually built on some of the notions of Aristotle in coming to a better understanding of what the angelic nature is like.
Mm. Okay, so then there are degrees of perfection of beings. Human beings are within the earthly realm the highest perfected being this side of heaven. So then why are we trying to limit the perfection of this being that we call human beings?
That is an excellent question.
Doesn't it seem sacrilegious, even the thought?
Well, right, and that, of course, would be a religious term. So if we were just use regular lay speak, we'd say that is a gross error. That is just whack to say... Here is the ordinary nature of something. A human being has both a material and spiritual component. And the spiritual component is simply that which people don't see. For example, the intellect.
Yeah.
The intellect doesn't reside in the brain. The brain is just like this interface. Who knows where the intellect lies, right?
Yeah.
Within that immaterial part of us. What animates us? Is it just electrical currents? Well, I mean... That electricity is just, I mean, that's only one component, right? I mean, yeah, we have a certain amount of electrical charge to us, but that's not the entirety of what animates us, which gives us life.
Right.
And so so we use that term spirit to describe that. And then in the greater context, we would say, well, that is supernatural, meaning it's greater than the natural components, such as the matter that we have, our physical body.
So then there's something very special, very unique, extremely valuable about the human being. We all kind of knew this intuitively, at least as a culture, until the new religion of secular humanism sort of began to permeate. But this notion of eugenics, and then, of course, the birth control league and Planned Parenthood and the contraception revolution... that began with the birth control pill, and then, of course, which gave rise to the abortion culture, beginning in earnest in 1973 with Roe versus Wade, and of course, all of this is now snowballing towards a euthanasia culture, as well as things not just killing life, but killing marriages, killing families. We have divorce culture, family breakdown. All of this stuff is related, isn't it?
It's very much related. And basically, when people no longer have the sense that something has purpose and meaning, that it could be whatever I want it to be, at least that's what the notion is, then things will never reach their proper end. So, for example, a marriage, one of the natural purposes of marriage is to beget children. You look through all human history, all cultures, and that is common amongst all. So we can say yes,
you can throw in all the other animal species too. It's natural amongst animal species.
I wouldn't say marriage, but, certainly the beginning of species.
Not marriage, yeah. Right.
Sex is for procreation.
Reproduction, yeah.
And that is normal.
Marriage, of course, adds the personal dimension.
Well, correct, and then a lot of that has to do family. With our spiritual nature,
right.
too.
Sure.
That there's this intimate connection.
Well, personal and spiritual I don't see as being exclusive. In fact, they are virtually the same thing in my mind. Personhood is a spiritual component to the human being.
Well, yes, because, for example, taking a step back, we could say that just as there are human persons, there are angelic persons, and using theological term, we would say that Jesus was a divine person.
So
with two natures.
Yeah, one of the Trinity, of three persons and one God, as Christians believe. So then persons are subjects with intellect and will, which, of course, rise above the physiological, of which is earthly. human beings happen to be the bridge between, you could say, heaven and earth, or the spiritual and the physical. And so there's something very unique, very important, and very valuable in each person. We're not just individuals in a species like snails, ants, antelope, birds, but each person, in a sense, is a universe in and of themselves. There's an interiority that each human being, a subjectivity that makes them call themselves I, which is radically different in one sense than everyone else that calls themselves I.
Oh, I would completely agree. Isn't that interesting how you can have, if you ever take a look at big families sometimes, they could have a dozen kids. And each of them, yeah, they're like, they're kind of a, insert last name, but when you look at them, they could all look completely different. Like, how did this happen from the common set of two parents? And their personalities, even amongst identical twins, could be radically different.
I was about to say that. I had my mouth open with that one. What fascinates me is that identical twins, monozygotic twinning, which occurs very early in our embryonic life, two human beings with the exact same DNA structure have different personalities, and when they say the word I, they mean something very different than when the other one says it.
Oh, yes.
Isn't it fascinating?
It is.
personhood, fascinating. Personhood that human beings
Completely different persons.
All right, so then this notion of keeping human beings from existing or killing them before birth, this whole notion of or killing them after birth, as in the genocidal movement of the 20th century, very, very, what is the word when something is so bizarrely opposite of what it should be?
Perverse.
Thank you. That's
perverse.
That does the trick. This whole notion is extremely perverse to what we intuitively understand about reality.
And this actually goes back to when we were talking earlier about freedom and how freedom is a lot like money in that it's means. It's not actually the end in itself, right?
Mm.
So what is, when people prize the environment over human life.
Yeah.
And they do it unnecessarily too. I mean, our nature is such that dipping into a little bit of theology here, we're charged with stewardship of the earth, but also to give life, be fruitful and multiply. And that's not just people say, well, that's just in scripture that. Well, you say, well, what's our nature? You look at our nature and you say, our nature is to be fruitful.
Yeah.
And not just materially by begetting new human beings, but actually even intellectually and socially.
To be creative, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So creative procreationally, you could say, which is what family is about, but creative intellectually and excuse me, artistically and otherwise.
Yeah.
978-454-4980. Yes. So this growing notion that human beings are things to be prevented or to be disposed of, especially if they're small and you can't see them and nobody will really know about it, all of this really flies in the face of goodness.
It is.
I guess, yeah.
Our nature is related to goodness. And when we corrupt our nature, when we work against our nature, we work against goodness.
Now, a lot of people who are for population control measures often mention, food scarcity, overpopulated in certain urban areas in the world, and of course that can't deny that. All you have to do is look at Tokyo, New York City, Mexico City, whatever. And there are there's a lot of people in one space. But one thing I find fascinating, and I first found this fact out in Guinness's World Book of Records, that if you were to take every single person in the entire world, and you were to stand them up side by side, you would not take more than a square mile of space.
That is correct. And
there's another fact. Can I say the second one that I know of? All right. Okay. And then you can say your and.
Yeah.
And if you were to give every single family in the entire world a half acre to put a house in and to live in, you would not have more land than the state of Texas.
That is what I heard. And with the people being in that square mile, I heard actually a little less than that. But granted, that was a little while ago. You could actually drown them all in the Colorado River. not that you would want to, but yeah. The point is that to put a perspective on things, to say that all these people in the world, it sounds like a lot. You know, 6-7 billion is a big number, but when you put in that all in a certain material space, it's not that big.
Okay, so then let's look at the potential problems. They all seem to congregate, well, not all of them. A lot of them seem to congregate in big cities.
Yes.
That is perhaps a potential problem. There is an unfair allotting of food in various places. That is a problem.
Yes.
There is certainly a big difference between the rich and the poor in the world. And of course, Pope Francis has been talking about a lot of that during his reign. That is a problem. How do you fix these problems instead of going the other route and saying that we need more contraception, more abortion, we need to control the population? And by the way, before you give me an answer, the first world, what we used to call the first world, the United States, Europe, Canada, Japan, Mexico, Australia, and so forth, and even Russia, we are having a crisis, a depopulation crisis in most of the world today, that governments are saying we need to take time off to make some more children because of the crisis in our respective countries that's going on. Russia's doing that. Japan is doing that. If it wasn't for illegal immigration, the United States would probably be doing that. So, your comments.
I would say you're absolutely right about the numbers. We're on a population decline. Was it like 2.1 children per family?
Necessary. Yeah. No, it's worse than that.
Well, that's what's necessary.
Oh, that's what's
for sustaining.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
And that the actual population rate is actually lower than that.
Spain,
in the first world.
Spain, Italy, Russia, around 1.4, 1.5 at the most.
Yeah.
The United States is around at 1.9 to 2.0, but most of the other countries, the developed countries, if you will, are dangerously low, and they don't know what to do with their elderly because not enough younger people are around to work and support programs like Social Security and Medicaid and so on and so forth.
Yep.
So we're having and of course in China, because of their one child rule that the government enforced.
Supposedly now increased to two.
Right. And because of their sex selection abortions, we have a serious problem not only with population, but with sex. There aren't enough women to go around for all these men. What's going to happen in another 10 years or so when all of these men need wives and don't have them?
Well, that's been going on in China for more than one generation, so they've already hit that problem in certain areas. I do want to take a quick step back regarding China and their one-child policy.
Yes.
That is, I would say, one step removed from the population bomb book. Mm-hmm. So that in itself was supported by the Sierra Club.
Okay.
And so the Sierra Club, some people know about it. Sometimes you'll see them advertised on college campuses. Let's protect the environment, let's save the environment. What a lot of people don't know is that for decades they have been deeply involved within this population control movement. In fact, so much so that when China went to institute their one-child policy back in the 70s, it was through the direct influence of the Sierra Club.
Okay. So animal rights did have a lot to do with this from the beginning, as well as racism. Yeah,
and some people suspect that some of that is a cover for some people, that there's deeper motives to just reducing the human population across the board.
Now, war-torn areas, of course, don't help the situation either. You have situations where dictators take all the money that people send their countries and use it for their own selfish purposes, or perhaps give it to the military or so forth. That's a problem.
It is. And that actually goes really to the point of us denying our nature. Our nature is to be fruitful, not just in begetting children, not just intellectually in our creativity, but actually socially too. I mean, we are designed. Remember that show we had a little while back about forgiveness?
Yes.
How if we don't forgive, we gum up the works. Our nature is to allow that forgiveness to help repair these bridges socially between people.
Then the problem isn't the problem isn't a lack of goods on this earth of ours, and it never has been the problem. The problem is a distribution of goods.
Well, that's right. Man's inhumanity to man. Yeah. I mean, think about it. Like, remember that We Are the World in the 80s. Mm. And they had all the pop stars singing that song.
We are the world.
We are the children.
That was John singing, not me.
Yeah, okay. That was just me singing. That was my boss impression, kind of.
That was your Springsteen impression. That worked well. Yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't really sing. He just kind of groans.
Well, I would agree with that, but there are too many Springsteen fans out there that wouldn't, so
all right,
don't go there at this moment.
I won't go there at this point. So, USA for Africa, that's right.
Mm.
So, and of course, the big poster children for that was all those commercials about Ethiopia. They show the starving children. And they had drought back then, for sure.
Yes.
And it was pretty severe. There's no question about that. What was ignored, though, is it wasn't just these poor people. They have a drought, and that's the only cause. The real cause was man's inhumanity to man. We would send relief over there, for example.
Yeah.
We would send food over. A lot of it would get stolen.
Yeah.
And then the warlords would take that. They would take that food to sometimes just keep it for themselves, or they would use it as trade bait for other things like guns and arms.
So in other words, no matter how you try to control, and I put that in quotes because it's really diminish the population. This is going to happen no matter what because of the sinful nature of man. Even if you had five people on the earth, three of them are not going to get their just distribution.
Well, it doesn't have to happen.
And right.
Free will
doesn't
comes
have
into
to
play.
Happen. Right.
I mean, when we look at history, we say a lot of people have consistently chosen the wrong.
It's the selfishness and the evil in our hearts that are the problem with the distribution of goods in the world, not a lack of them.
That is absolutely correct. Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
And even when we look, I mean, before the show, I did a little research. Some stuff I had already known about, but I did a little more. And there was just tons of things, of tools and resources that are available to people. Examples of, for example, like people going in and terraforming deserts. Think about like the city of Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes.
I mean, my sister lives in that area. First time I went there a few years ago, it was 113 degrees.
Yeah.
Super duper dry.
Human beings can live here. We only have a minute left. But I think the point you're making is that we have our human ingenuity that we were talking about earlier, the fact that we have creativity and intellect and will, are able to transform deserts into living spaces now.
Absolutely.
Pretty soon, I don't know how soon, but we will be able to transform planets and other celestial bodies into livable spaces by shipping in oxygen and so forth. Who knows how we're going to do it, but it's possible.
I would say yes, it is possible.
I just want to tell the audience right now that look up Demographic Winter, and you will see a two-part series on YouTube. I don't know if there's anything more important for you than to watch that series. Demographic Winter, it's by a lot of intelligentsia academic types speaking about the true depopulation problem that we have in the world today. Last word?
If you're married, be fruitful, be multiply, and don't be selfish. Whatever problems you think you have or whatever is out there in the world, just know that it's much worse if you go against your nature.
Persons are a resource.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.